This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan provide signature support for our program. Your number, 877-217-5757. Emails are at talk@talklouisiana.org. We begin today with Bassem Youssef. He was with us a month and a half ago, and he was a huge hit with our listeners, so here he is again. His latest work is a novel, The Magical Reality of Nadia. But what an amazing life, a true Renaissance man, a heart surgeon, a comedian, writer, producer, media critic, television host, and in his home country of Egypt. 10 years ago, exactly 10 years ago this month, he started a podcast and had 30 million viewers at one point. But he was taking aim at the governments of the Middle East, in particular his home country, and it didn't sit well with the powers that be, and he now is in what amounts to exile in the United States and lives in the great city of Los Angeles. And good morning again, Bassem Youssef.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me again.
Well, it's good to talk with Bassem, who today is in Miami. He's making the rounds, and there is much to talk about. Obviously, we have a new president in Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., and Donald Trump is gone but not forgotten. It seems we can't stop talking about him, can we?
No, I don't think so. I think people just want to dwell in misery, but that's fine.
How is he viewed in the Middle East, President Trump?
Well, it's very interesting to that you ask that, because actually most of the pro-authority in Egypt and in the Middle East actually are very pro-Trump. And the reason for that is that he kind of like gave a carte blanche, like a pass for many of the dictators in the Middle East to do whatever they want with their people. It's kind of like he stopped bothering them. You know, the Democrats, the liberals, the left wing in America kind of like gives the occasional slap on the wrist to the dictators in the Middle East, but Trump kind of like let them be. So they were very happy with Trump. And the same conspiracy theories that you hear from QAnon about, you know, the liberals and the what they do and the secret cabal and all of that has been actually very popular conspiracy theories in the Middle East, because they don't like that way that sometimes Obama or Biden or the left wing administration kind of like go after them for human rights abuse. Mm. So Trump was a very favorite president for them.
Interesting that they like Trump more than others. And in some countries, we would understand this, for example, in Saudi Arabia. But Joe Biden has denounced the killing of Khashoggi, but he has not done anything about it. And do you think he should?
I don't know if he will do anything about it. At the end of the day, Saudi Arabia is a strategic partner for America. I mean, I think at the end of the day, I mean, to be honest, every single American administration that came in, whether Democrat or Republican, they may talk a big talk about human rights and everything, but at the end of the day, they don't do anything. I mean, I'll give you another example other than Saudi Arabia. For example, you have Pakistan, like Afghanistan, all of these countries, their dictators were supported by the United States, whatever the administration was, because it's easier for America to just speak with one person instead from a freely elected official who is actually have an obligation mm-hmm. towards their people. It's been always easier for superpowers to deal with one person, one dictator who fears to lose their seat in order for America to kind of secure their strategic needs. So I don't know. It's just like it looks nice and everything, but I don't think anything will happen.
877-217-5757 for Bassem Youssef. On Twitter, he has over 11 million followers, Facebook over 5 million, Instagram over 3.5 million, and at the height of his powers, he had 30 million viewers for his podcast. And to put that in perspective...
For the TV show.
And the television show, yes. You became not only a podcast sensation, but you were actually on conventional media. And, of course, those who have seen Bassem would understand it. He's a handsome fellow who's about to be 47 years old. He looks like an anchor man. And you were very popular, but you had your gig taken away from you, and now you're not even in Egypt. Is that hard to deal with, or does life go on?
Actually, no. I'm enjoying and embracing my new life in the United States. I've been touring the United States for my stand-up comedy special, and it was hard, still hard, to do comedy in your second language in English. But this whole thing has given me an opportunity to have an incredible adventure in a new country, a great country, I have to say, that I like and I love. And I kind of like put whatever happened to me in Egypt behind me. I don't want to dwell on the past. It was hard at the beginning. It was difficult to have everything that you worked for taken away from you in a heartbeat. But instead of kind of like crying about it, I decided to do something about it and kind of create and reinvent myself in a new country. So that's why I have these like tours, and I have this like children's book coming up. So it's been amazing to be giving a second chance in this country.
Well, the show at one point achieved unprecedented weekly viewership for 11 consecutive weeks, going up more and more each week, more than any other program in that part of the world. And to put it in perspective, 30 million is twice the number of viewers than Rush Limbaugh had listeners, and Rush was considered to be, and for good reason, a titan of radio broadcasting. But yeah, you caught the Middle East by storm, and part of it is that you're educated and humorous and opinionated, and of course that was a bit too much for the government. But you were called the John Stewart of the Middle East. You became friends with the John Stewart of the United States. You've been on his show more than a few times, and at one point, I know you said that the U.S. treats the Middle East like a boil on its butt. why do we do that?
I don't know. It's kind of like you can't get rid of them, and you can't stop licking it.
Well,
I don't know. Like the Middle East is. Just happened to be in the middle of the world. It kind of like controls most of the transportation. It has like a huge amount of oil, and it has Israel, which is like, you know, America can't get let go of it. So for all of these reasons, America finds itself involved in that part of the world. But it's kind of like you end up at the end of the day in bed with the same dictators every single time. So it's kind of like a very, very unique relationship. And the Middle East doesn't seem to let go of America, too. It's kind of they hate America, whatever happens. Like, America is, like, damned if they do, damned if they don't. If they interfere, they are, like, meddling with other people's business. If they don't interfere, they're, like, forsaking us. So it's kind of like it seems that it's a very, very abusive relationship from both sides.
What did you think of the invasion of Iraq?
Well, I mean, what do you think of the invasion of Iraq?
I thought it was terrible.
Of course it is. I mean, this is a perfect example. You know, Iraq is a country that invaded another country, Kuwait, right? That's from the beginning of 1992. And it's kind of like if America didn't do anything, America would have forsaken the ally, Kuwait. And then it went in and it kind of invaded. And it's like now America is the bad boy. And now, but like now for the second invasion, for no reason whatsoever for 9/11, Bush decided to go and invade another country, just like, you know, because they didn't find any other culprit. And that was like a very, it's like a typical hostile takeover. It was a business takeover because of the oil. And it's just that because of that, America has sacrificed thousands of their troops. They have spent like trillions of dollars. And the only people who kind of benefit from it are the oil companies and the business companies, where the regular Americans either got killed in Iraq or got their income slashed because of the warfare economics. And now the only people who are like benefiting are the oil companies and the big ones. So it was a very good war for the oil companies, and it was a shitty war for the rest of the world.
Well, Dick Cheney, the vice president at the time, said that they would be throwing flowers at us as liberators, saying, thank you, America, we love you. It didn't work out that way, did it?
It did. Well, it worked out for some people who kind of benefited from the war. I mean, there are like amazing people who got like amazing, amassed a huge amount of fortune because of that. they should be thanking America, of course. But it comes back to a very fundamental question. I mean, this war was unfair. It was terrible. But then you had a dictator who kind of killed his people. Who has the right to come in and remove the dictator? The police of the world, the international community, his own people, but they can't. It's kind of like it just opens our minds for so many questions. I mean, Saddam Hussein was a terrible dictator, but he was so terrible. And at the same time, America did horrible things in Iraq that now people in Iraq say, oh, we would like to have Saddam back. I mean, isn't it like terrible? Like the liberator of the world came in and people still prefer the old dictator for them.
We'll talk more with Bassem Youssef. His book is The Magical Reality of Nadia. It's a novel based on his experiences, but he has some thoughts about what's happening in his former homeland and here in the U.S. back in 90 seconds. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. I'm Jim Inkster. Producer Katie Ann McDonald is with us. And for another segment, Bassem Youssef, one of the most prominent people in the world in 2013. Time magazine named him one of the 100 most influential people in the world, and for good reason. He had 30 million viewers of his show in Egypt that was a profile of the Middle East, in which he did a lot of things tongue-in-cheek, and in those parts of the world, there's a different approach to media than there is in the U.S., and a listener asks about that. What is the major distinction between what happens in that region of the world and what happens here as far as media, Bassem?
Well, there's a lot of people now that talk about cancel culture and stuff like that, right? But the thing is, the real cancel culture is when you have an authority that kind of stops your program, that like puts your program on hold, that puts you in jail because of your free speech. That is the real cancel culture. What we're having in America is just like people are upset with certain speeches, you know, but like nobody actually is going to put you in jail because of that. You might lose your job because you're going to be working in a private entity that under some certain pressure from the public will cancel you. But if you want to really know what cancel culture is, like you need to come back to Egypt and see what does it mean. So I think that's the main reason. I mean, whatever has to be the oppression of freedom of expression is actually done by the system, by the government. But here it's kind of like whatever backlash you will have from the public.
877-217-5757. Rose in Spanish Town, you're on with Bassem. Hi, Rose.
Yeah, good morning, Jim and Dr. Bassem. I have one question, and it can be for him or the next person coming up, because how does he feel about the Equality Act that's just been passed by the House?
All right, an Equality Act... Which, if the Senate went along with it, which is doubtful, would prohibit discrimination, particularly against people who are gay. Your thoughts about how America's hung up on sex and actually takes laws to prohibit people from expressing themselves in certain ways?
Well, I mean, as far as I remember, this is a secular country that has like a clear distinction, like a clear separation between church and state. So whatever discussion that should be done here is a social discussion if we should view these people as humans or not. The opposition for that kind of these kind of laws come from people from a religious background. And they say they're gay or transgender or whatever because of my Bible tells me so, my God tells me so. I don't even know why this should be even a discussion because this is not a religious constitution. Mm-hmm. Constitution is based on secular values. They are not. This country is not made on Christian, Judeo-Christian principles like many of the Republicans say. This is a secular country, has a secular constitution, has a separation between the church and the state, and any kind of discussion should be done in that kind of light. So I don't know where is the problem.
Now, another listener asks about the controversy that now could cost Governor Andrew Cuomo his job in New York. He, according to many women, acted inappropriately. Your thoughts about whether he deserves to get the gate for what he did?
Well, it seems that, I mean, it happened to Al Franklin. I mean, I'm talking about Democratic examples, of course. Al Franklin had like a much less or much smaller incident, and he still resigned. And I think he has heard a lot of women. If these allegations were true, I think he should have to kind of like own up to this. And I mean, Cuomo, I mean, I was a huge bad fan of Cuomo during COVID. He did a wonderful job, and it saddens me to see that he was involved in something like this. But like, it seems that there's some women that was hurt by his actions, and I think he should own up, like, you know, he should pay for that.
Well, many Democratic politicians through the years have tried to live up to the reputation of John Kennedy, and they've been rather clumsy in their approaches, from Bill Clinton to Gary Hart and now Andrew Cuomo. And when it involves employees, I think rightfully is viewed as sexual misconduct. But
yes.
But is there a double standard with Donald Trump being accused of raping a woman in a department store, having sex with a porn star, paying her off not to talk, and yet the Republicans, particularly the evangelicals, they kept loving him some Donald Trump? What do you think?
Well, I mean, they are hypocritical. I mean, definitely hypocritical. I mean, these are like, you find like the people who talk about religion the whole time, they have absolutely no problem with their president having affairs with porn stars and paying them off. But I mean, if that is the difference between, I mean, I don't want to say like they're Democrats and Republican, but like it's just like it, the hypocrisy of the right wing, the hypocrisy of Republicans and the religious right is just like outrageous. I mean, like you have all of this, you have this guy who has like had a horrible history with women, and yet you have evangelical leaders coming to his Oval Office, gathering around him and like touching him like Jesus,
mm-hmm.
Jesus.
Well, another listener, this is Holly in the Garden District, asks about Meghan Markle. She has caused a storm in Great Britain with her remarks about racism among the royals. Is that a surprise?
Oh, no, it's not a surprise at all. I mean, I think the Crown, the movie show, the TV show The Crown kind of prepared us well to see this hat coming, especially what the last season, what happened with Diana. But what was so interesting is, like, that guy, Piers Morgan, you know, that guy is a hypocrite.
Oh,
man.
Now,
I mean,
come on. Please watch the language. But keep going. Keep going.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean that. But, like, I mean, that guy is a real hypocrite, you know. And he is the way that he was going off on Merkel is kind of like the same way exactly that right-wing people here on Fox News go against the victim, you know. He went in, he took off in his Good Morning Britain. And I remember him, I tweeted to him once and he blocked me on Twitter. He was talking about the insurrection, you know, in the capital insurrection and the attack, correct?
Right.
And I told, he was talking about like, this is terrible, whatever. And then I tweeted to him, like, you are a hypocrite. You had your picture, your profile picture with Donald Trump, and you praised him for 4 years, and now you're coming and say, like, this is terrible. You are a hypocrite, so he blocked me.
Well, he also didn't do very well succeeding Larry King, so there you go.
Yeah.
Another listener asks about the Catholic Church weighing in once again against same-sex marriage, saying it cannot condone sin, and the Pope signing off on it. Is that a surprise?
No, it's not a surprise at all. It's a surprise because the Pope Francis has been viewed as a very progressive pope, and he actually said kind of like fair things about the gay community before. But I think he can't go so far as condoning same-sex marriages, because at the end of the day, that's in the religion. I don't think he can change that. I mean, the only thing that he can change is that he can have to have like a big stand about so many things, about the principles of the faith. But I think they're not ready for that.
Do you like Los Angeles?
I love Los Angeles. It is the best city in the world, the best weather in the world, amazing. I want to live and die there. That's how much I love Los Angeles.
So you're not leaving?
No, I'm staying.
I bet you live on the beach.
I live in Redondo Beach, which is closer to the beach, yes, so it makes me love this city even more.
Well, that's a city that is cosmopolitan. A lot of people from the Middle East have migrated there, and California through the years has migrated from a red state to a blue state. It is the state that produced Ronald Reagan and Pete Wilson and Duke Majian, a Republican governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, they had a succession of GOP governors, but now they have... a governor, Gavin Newsom, it looks like he's going to be recalled. What do you make of that?
I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know why people are mad at Gavin Newsom. I mean, I think he did well in the corona, but, like, I mean, that's my opinion. I think people have different opinion about him, but, like, I think he did well. I mean, and it's interesting that you could talk about the immigration, because now there's reverse migration between people from Los Angeles going to Texas, and they're kind of, like, relocating in Texas. Elon Musk and even Joe Rogan and many businesses, I think, because of the corporate tax.
Yeah, they
but
they,
you know, but I don't know. I hope he stays. I hope Gavin stays. I don't know why. I mean, I just moved to Los Angeles 3-4 years ago, so I don't know why people are so angry at him. Maybe I'm missing something, but so far I hope he stays.
Well, it's always a pleasure. Thank you, Bassem Youssef. We'll be calling again, and keep up the good work. The book is The Magical Reality of Nadia. And we will return with Kate Brumley, Superintendent of Education, after this time out for the news on Talk Louisiana.
I'm going to need you to move.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. In-house is Kate Brumley, the Superintendent of Education in Louisiana. He took the post in June of last year and has been a busy guy in the COVID age. And, of course, we have a moving target as to how we have responded in many ways. And education has had to adjust more than any other entity, I would say. And for those unfamiliar, Dr. Brumley has a long history in education. He served 6 years as DeSoto Parish School Superintendent. And during that time, results improved in that area. The system ranks as one of Louisiana's top 10 districts for student academic achievement, and it was at number 49 when he took over. In addition, he has served as president of the Louisiana Association of School Superintendents, representing the interests of all Louisiana school systems at the state level. He holds a Bachelor's of Science Education from Northwestern in Natchitoches, a Master's in School Administration from LSU, and a Doctorate in Education and School Leadership from Stephen F. Austin. And good morning to you, Dr. Hey, Brumley.
Thanks for having me this
and
morning.
Welcome to your maiden voyage on Talk Louisiana. Well, how has COVID affected things?
Well, maybe the question is, how is it not? You know, we are, you know, I'm roughly 10 months into this job tenure, and can say that I'm just consistently inspired by what I'm seeing across our state. And you know, I look at other cities and other states across the nation, and I see them, you know, struggling to figure out, one, how do they keep kids and employees safe, and then two, you know, how do they string together some form of an educational system to that. And while our work has not been perfect, I would put our educational community up against anything in this country. You know, right now we have over 70% of our kids back in full face-to-face instruction every day, and we're able to do that because we have solid mitigation efforts in place, and we're following the science on this, but at the same time believe that our kids need to be in school, and we have a responsibility to educate kids, and that's what we're trying to do every single day.
Your number is 877-217-5757 for Dr. Cade Brumley, Louisiana State Superintendent of Education, and he's talking about his 10-year tour of duties, a 10-month tour of duty.
Feels like 10 years.
You'll probably be here a long time. You're a young guy, and you got this opportunity, and you're not a shrinking violet. You're taking action. But in the COVID age, it's one in which we, as I stated, it's a moving target. We get new information, some of it good, some of it not so good. You say 70% of the kids are in school. What do classrooms generally look like right now?
Yeah, so very, very early on this summer, we partnered with medical professionals across the state, and we put together a series of reopening guidelines, such as, you know, number of students that could be in a room, number of kids that can be on a bus, sanitation, face coverings, temperature checks, all these different things. And so that's, you know, that's what you see across the state. Now, we also have kids in virtual instruction if their families have selected to go that route, and some systems remain in hybrid. The CDC put out regulations a couple of weeks ago on how to open schools in America, and frankly, it was quite affirming because it was almost as if they copied our plan from last summer, and our medical professionals have shared that schools in Louisiana are one of the safest places that kids can be.
Well, kids get COVID, as we know, but they usually recover, and they're around teachers, though, who are more vulnerable since they are older, and I would imagine when teachers are instructing, they're still wearing masks while they're talking, probably.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we knew early that we wanted to make sure that our teachers had access to the vaccine as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. So we advocated for that. And we also advocated for early child care centers, daycare centers, birth to four, because we oversee that as well. And we were thankful to get, you know, some level of priority access around that. And I think it's a step towards returning to normalcy to give those individuals that access. At the same time, I can't help but compliment our leaders and teachers and workers across the state, because, again, you look at across the country and you see places where, you know, teachers are not stepping back into those classrooms. And that's not what we've seen in Louisiana. We really see our teachers having done heroes work.
All right, 877-217-5757 is your number. Cade Brumley is here just 10 months into the job. His predecessor, John White, was there a long time and had his critics. And, of course, he had some supporters. And he always, when he would visit with us, he took pride in test scores, which moved around, as we know. But generally, he felt that things had improved during his watch. How are we looking in that regard right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think our state, in many ways, people across the country could look at some of the reform efforts in Louisiana and be proud of those things, you know. But as you've read my bio, I couldn't help but think that the underlying story of that is, you know, I'm a Louisiana guy that wants to do good for Louisiana. You know, I've grown up with all of the stories around we're 48th or 49th and all of these different indicators. And, you know, I just simply want to do my part to change that. And frankly, I believe we can. And so that's what we will do. We'll have strategy around it to make sure that we do our best to improve outcomes for kids.
877-217-5757 for Cade Brumley. And I have some questions online. Teacher unions, John White was often at odds with them. What's your thought about getting along with teacher unions?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm coming to this work after having served as superintendent of Jefferson Parish Schools. In you know, South Louisiana, and you know, in that work, which is the state's largest system at over 51,000 students, you had to work together to move the work. And so, while I certainly didn't agree with every position of our local union, I did make a point to meet with them monthly to understand their concerns, and so hopefully they could understand mine. It's going to take all of us working together to get where we need to be.
Interesting that Jefferson has more public school students than East Baton Rouge, and we're a larger parish. That says something about people here sending their kids off to private schools, right?
Well, I think both of those communities have a rich history of Catholic education that predates the public education system, and so it still exists today. In fact, you know, across Louisiana, we have over 800,000 students for which we're responsible each and every day, and That's a combination of non-public students, traditional public, as well as public charter.
800,000 students. What about charter schools?
Yeah, you know, we believe in school choice. We believe that families should have the opportunity to have an informed choice around where their kids can go to school. Unfortunately, across our state, we have too many schools that are still underperforming in their service to kids. Mm-hmm. And so we intend to look at our resource, and we are, to work to transition those schools into a better posture. But at the same time, I think it's important for kids in those schools and their families to have the opportunity to choose a different setting.
Do you like vouchers?
I think that scholarships are an important part of choice. And, you know, we have 122,000 kids right now in D&F schools across our state. And while we work to improve, I think that scholarship is an important piece to that, to give those families an option.
As we know, all public schools are not equal, in resources, in the kids' backgrounds. You look at U High, that's a public school in quotation marks, but then there are other schools that are just depleted with almost no resources, and it's hard to fathom a kid having the same kind of a chance going to one of those schools. How can we change that, or at least close the gap a bit?
Well, I mean, I think this is a place where, from a strategy standpoint, you have to look at the data, see where we are, and then you have to make the investment, whether that's funding or human capital or conversation around those level of improvement. So, for instance, it all starts for us in Louisiana around early childhood education. For me, that is the greatest educational challenge of our generation. And right now, we only have 40% of kids across the state of Louisiana coming to kindergarten on day one with the basic skills that they need to be successful. And then whenever you look at our third grade literacy rates, we know that only about 46% of kids are on grade level in content and reading content by the end of third grade. And a kid who's not on grade level by the end of third grade is two or three times more likely to drop out of high school.
877-217-5757 if you'd like to talk with Dr. Cade Brumley, Superintendent of Education in Louisiana. He's from DeSoto Parish, but his last stop was in Jefferson Parish, so he's been all around, and he knows our state well and believes that we're on a track to doing better in education. Mark on Highland Road. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, Dr. Brumley, I think you know that the fastest growing population are the immigrants and the non-English speaking students. What do you? And looks like we're going to get another surge very quickly. Are y'all planning to ask for more money, funding for that effort?
All right. Is that a factor right now?
Well, I mean, I think this is a place where I am uniquely equipped, coming out of Jefferson Parish Schools, where every year we would get, 1,500 to 2,000 newcomers to the mm-hmm. school system. What my position has always been is that, those conversations can and will happen. But for us, if a kid shows up at our door, we're going to do our best to educate that kid. And so I think you have to think about that in a couple of different ways. One is, do you have programs that help those students on their first day into the classroom? I think you have to make sure that you're prepared to help teachers when they have multiple languages in their classroom and they're not bilingual, and how they support students in multiple languages. I think that it is true that we do have a growing number of students who are coming from outside the state of Louisiana. We have to be prepared to meet those needs.
Of the 800,000 students you're serving, our state is about one-third African-American. What's the percentage of minority students among the 800,000?
Well, it depends on how you break that out. From public to non-public, it looks a little bit differently. But what I will share is, unfortunately, in our state, we're an impoverished state compared to other states around the country. And, in fact, about over 70% of our kids in our schools come from economically disadvantaged families. And so, we have work to do. In many ways, we have to get back to some of the basics.
It's a majority, isn't it, black students, and as far as public school students?
Not necessarily. But, we do have about 800,000 students, and we have a diverse mix across our state.
877-217-5757, your number for Dr. Cade Brumley. We'll return with another segment as we close out the hour with Cade Brumley after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. We'll go to the phone lines again with Dr. Cade Brumley, the Superintendent of Education in Louisiana. And when we were talking a moment ago, and I mentioned the 800,000 students, that does include parochial students, I believe. So Catholic school, because kids are included, who are going to Catholic schools, because there is some supervision from him regarding those schools as well. It's not just a public thing, but when you add the parochial schools with public schools, Dr. Brumley has the numbers he's provided to me, 48.2% white, 38.7% black, and then 2% Asian, 8% Hispanic, 0.6% American Indian, multiple races, 2.8%, and Hawaiian Pacific Islander, 0.1%. So we have a diverse collection of kids going to schools in our state. 877-217-5757. I think it's Ari in Central. Good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
No, it's Avery in Tara, Jim. But thank you for taking my call. And Dr. Brumley, thank you for taking my call as well. Louisiana is very much an agrarian state. What are your thoughts on incorporating agriculture into lesson plans and teaching in our curriculum across the state?
All right. Well, you have been in the farmlands of Louisiana, being from where you are. And by the way, Dr. Lauren Scott, he took issue with me saying agriculture was the biggest industry in the state, and he did note that in an email to me, there are 32,000 farms in Louisiana. And quite likely, agriculture is the biggest employer. But I think Dr. Scott is right that oil and gas provides more revenue. But still, we're talking, if there are 32,000 farms in the state, and that's what Dr. Scott tells me, we're talking just an enormous amount of people who live in rural areas that people in the city don't often appreciate. How are they being tended to?
Yeah, I'm gonna take this in a slightly different direction, but at the same time answer the question. I think for too long in Louisiana, we have undervalued career and technical education, vocational trades, and so one of the endeavors for which we're really proud is this notion of trying to rethink the 11th and 12th grade year across our schools, and we have asked systems across the state to pair with community colleges, four-year universities, and organizations that offer credentials or apprenticeships, and submit opportunities for us to explore pathways so that things that traditionally happen 11th and 12th grade year can be replaced by opportunities where students can exit 12th grade dually degreed with a high school degree and an associate's degree, or dually degreed with a high school degree and some level of an apprenticeship. That way, if they graduate on May 15th, that May 16th, we have been deliberate in connecting them with what is next for them. If you look across the state, the average age of a community college student is around 27. So what happens to a kid in those 10 years? And so we just think we have to be more thoughtful in our connections to mm-hmm. our university partners and apprenticeships so that every student is ready, which includes those career and technical crafts, which is also includes our agricultural sector.
Some kids still have to go a long way to get to school, though, don't they?
Yeah, that is true. You know, and especially if you look up in around Northeast Louisiana, which is very rural, and you know you run into a situation where many people are still moving from some of our rural areas.
Yeah, I remember I've driven that road many times. Highway 65, and there used to be this beautiful school building in Transylvania, and now it's a relic. It's in disrepair, and holes in the walls and windows gone. And I suppose there's a school in that area, but I was thinking, I bet some kids have to travel 20, 30 miles to and from school, and time is money, and time takes a toll. So you dealt with that. How was it in DeSoto Parish?
Yeah, I mean, DeSoto is a mix of rural and suburban, but one of the things we've learned most recently is the need for high-quality internet services in these rural areas, as many schools have had to go mm-hmm. remote. You know, we are investing in broadband. We are funding the state's first broadband office to coordinate efforts around broadband in our state, because right now, we have surveyed, and only 3 out of 4 kids in Louisiana have access to the internet in their home.
Isn't that something?
So whenever you're talking 25%
don't.
That's right. Whenever you're talking about delivering instruction remotely, the challenge is many of our families don't have access to the internet, even if they could afford it. So that's an area where we have to do better as a state.
Was it an error for former Governor Jindal to bypass the broadband money?
Well, what I know to be true is that with the new stimulus money that is coming down from the federal government, we have to be thoughtful in how we use that. And I think that if we don't address the mm-hmm. broadband issue with that, it's a miss.
Sounds like your answer is yes. But anyway, teacher pay. We have strived to be at the Southern Regional Average, but that's a moving target. And when often we get a raise, as the governor is proposing, it's small, and it may be smaller than other states, and we fall farther behind. Where are we right now in that area?
Yeah, we're a few thousand still behind the Southern Regional Average, and of course, you know, all of us want to be there. If you look at my background, I've always championed teacher pay, but I also think we have to think about this in a 21st century way. You know, we have to make sure that our teachers earn competitive salaries, but at the same time, I think there's an opportunity for us to explore teachers who are working in some of our higher need schools, teachers who have certifications that are areas of need, such as high school math and science and special ed. Also rewarding teacher leadership, teachers who want to take on additional opportunities while remaining a teacher, and as well as teachers who are showing great success in terms of student outcomes. So I think that we should also be exploring conversations around differentiated pay, not a one-size-fits-all approach that really mm-hmm. elevates the profession of teachers, because, you know, I believe that teachers are professionals, and one of the ways that we can show them that they're professionals is a compensation system that makes sense.
Well, for 2019, the information that Dr. Brumley has provided, Louisiana teachers earned an average of $50,288, the Southern Regional average $52,494, and the national average $66,42. It is interesting that there is a slight majority of men, boys, who are in schools in Louisiana as opposed to girls, 51 to 49, actually 51.1 to 48.9. That's an interesting statistic. But among teachers, you note 60% of Louisiana teachers are white females and 5% are black males.
Yeah, it's. I think it's an opportunity. If you're a child across the state today, there's a 60% chance that you're in a classroom and a white female is your teacher. And so we need to make sure that we are deepening the bench of teachers across the state, increasing the pool of teachers across the state from every demographic. But also, whenever you look at our numbers, you can see the number of students that we have that are of other races, that are students of color. And so, you know, if we can also work to further diversify that workforce and bring in additional, you know, for instance, African-American males into the teaching profession, I think that that would go a long way for all of us, and especially in terms of being mentors, not just to African-American boys, but to every boy across our state.
A listener asks about ACT scores. What's our average on the ACT right now?
Yeah, unfortunately, and this is an area where we are presently exploring, unfortunately, we're around just over an 18. And Louisiana is at its lowest ACT score over basically the past decade since we've been asking every single child to take the ACT. We're concerned about this year because we know the ACT score is what makes students eligible for dual enrollment and AP courses. So one of the things that we're doing with our stimulus money is we are funding a publicly funded ACT voucher for every sophomore and senior this year, so that those sophomores might earn a score that qualifies them for dual enrollment or AP, and those seniors might, with this additional opportunity, qualify for TOPS or the college of their choice. All Louisiana juniors already have access to a publicly funded ACT.
Well, it's still 20 for TOPS, right?
Yes, and we need to do a crosswalk. We need to do a crosswalk against what ACT is asking versus what we are teaching in the schools. Just a simple thing. It's not revolutionary, but just to make sure that we're arming our kids with the skills that they need whenever they step in for that assessment. Because rather you believe in ACT and its value or not, in Louisiana, ACT is a gatekeeper because of the TOPS program.
Mm-hmm. Another listener, this one often comes up. This is Jamie downtown asking about the move by some to have teachers armed with weapons. Is that a good idea?
Yeah, that's not an area that we have explored. We'll leave that up to the legislators.
But it would be a game changer, I'm sure. And you're a rural guy. I'm sure you've handled weapons, and weapons can be very dangerous. They can be helpful at times, but there's a cost to that. And the legislature, to this point, is not embrace that idea. So, but as far as the safety of the kids, we live in a dangerous world these days. Are kids generally safe when they go off to school?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and look, I'm a former school principal, and I didn't understand this until my first day as a principal. And this is God's honest truth in a story. I woke up that first day as a school principal, and I thought, oh my God, I'm responsible for everybody else's kid.
Yeah.
And so I really took that to heart and worked every day to make sure our kids were safe. And, you know, so much of that is around access control. But I can tell you, if you look at studies on violent events in schools, what you find is that in almost every situation, someone at that school knew that something bad was going to happen. And so if we can work to develop relationships, appropriate relationships between kids and students and build that community, you know, there's a greater likelihood that those events would be reported in advance.
Well, let's have you back soon. Obviously, Dr. Brumley's devoted his career to making education better in Louisiana. We've got some roads to travel, and he's the director. He's in charge of the whole state now, 800,000 kids, and hopefully this is the first of many times you'll be with us. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan provide signature support. Until tomorrow, for Katie Ann McDonald, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening, and stay safe and stay tuned.